The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
I would say we grieved differently in the sense that she was a bit more vocal about it, whereas I just kind of went a little bit more quiet, and then I'd have my moments where it would all just come out.
Let's do it. This is the Still Parents podcast. My name's Dan. I'm here, as always, with Ryan Jackson and Matt Whitehouse from the Lily May Foundation. This is supported by Global's Make Some Noise, and we really appreciate the support that they offer us as well, which also means you can find this podcast on the Global Player. If you don't have that, you can go and download it. We are joined tonight remotely with our guest, whose name is Raj. I believe, am I saying this correctly, Raj? Raj Chagger, is that right?
Yes, that's right, mate, yeah.
Fantastic, thank you very much. If you're listening back to this on your podcast provider, and you haven't seen the picture, Matt made a very good observation actually before we went live. He looks quite a similar look to Theo Walcott.
Just a bolder version.
Yeah, it's the stubble, wasn't it?
yeah, definitely.
A slightly chubbier version as well.
there's worse players to be compared to, isn't there?
There are, yeah.
And all of that. Oh, it's got Ian Holloway.
Ian Holloway.
Because he's bold and shit. Are you local to us, Raj? Are you from around these air parts?
So I'm from Birmingham, but I live in Nottingham now. So I was in left Birmingham when I was about 18 for uni, and then kind of never went back to Birmingham.
That happens a lot, doesn't it?
but still Birmingham City fan, had to stay true to.
Oh yeah, Blue Nose. Sound.
So someone has to.
So if you're listening outside, if you're not too familiar with football, I know we won't bang on about it too much, but yeah, Ryan's team is Villa, and obviously they're the local rivals. Birmingham don't really care too much about Villa, but Villa hate the Blues. Look at you.
I'm saying nothing.
Don't worry, Matt's a Baggies fan, and I've got the short straw this season because I'm Leicester fan. We shall leave it at that. Now, before we get into it, should we play Guess How Old Raj's game? Because he looks very fresh-faced.
Oh, no. I reckon 31.
Ooh. How old's Theo Walker?
30. I'm going 33.
Yeah, 30. I'm going 32 then in the middle.
31. Yeah.
Oh, I love you guys. I'm 37.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
There you go. Baby face.
There it is.
Yeah. Baby face.
Yeah, good on you.
It's good lighting. Good lighting.
You're married to Sharon.
That's right. Yeah. 11 years now.
11 years.
Yeah. So we were 18, 19 when we met at uni.
What do you do for a living? If you don't mind me asking,
so I work for the Department for Education children's social care. So things like, so kind of like policy related, anything to do with like children with SEND, working to improve services available to them and make sure the information is there for parents of children with SEND. I've been in the civil service for 10 years now across a variety of different roles. A couple of years within the Department for Education, a couple of years with HMRC, a couple of years with the Ministry of Justice.
Not much then.
Keeps me busy.
So you lost your daughter. I'd make sure I'm pronouncing this correctly. So it was Rianne.
Rianne, yeah.
Rianne, not yeah. Rianne. As we always say, if you could take us through what happened with Rianne in the lead up to your loss, and then we'll come back with some questions and also talk about your relationships and all the things that we do every episode on this. So yeah, over to you, Raj.
Sure. So Rianne was born in April 2020, and he was just over 4 pounds when he was born. So it was really small. From around 6 months of my wife being pregnant, the scans reveal that he was small, and all the subsequent scans were showing that he was growing, but not to the rate that they would expect. So we were expecting him to be a small baby anyway, but I think when he came out at 4 pounds, it was, you know, when you see a baby that small, it does kind of take you back a little bit. And this was at the height of the first COVID lockdown.
Yes.
So I was allowed to be there for the birth, and then because of how small Rianne was, him and my wife had to stay in hospital for a week. So I was there for the birth and I had to go home. Then I wasn't allowed back into hospital for the week. So that was difficult, you know, difficult enough as it was just with a normal pregnancy. But the day after Rian was born, they found out that he had two holes in his heart. So they did a scan of his heart and it uncovered that. And then the day after that, he failed his newborn hearing screening. And my wife had to kind of be told this information on her own. And she had just had a C-section. So she's dealing with her own recovery, dealing with a very small baby. And then she's handing every day, you know, a new piece of quite heartbreaking news. And then she had to call me and relay the information to me. And then I'm just kind of sat at home twiddling my thumbs because there's nothing I can do to help.
Were you literally, you couldn't go in for any part of any day?
No.
I think that's fucking mad.
No. She could video call me.
Yeah.
I know we've talked about this before. You've voiced your opinion on this before a lot, haven't you?
Like, yeah,
you know,
right.
It's just, I think it's, it's scandalous. I do.
Yeah. It was treated like just any other visitor, but that's your child as well.
It's mad, because this was, like you said, it was the first lockdown, wasn't it? 2020, around April. So you're just left sat there, as you said, twiddling your thumbs. Were you at home? Because we had one guest who's waiting out in the car park, wasn't it?
Yeah. In fact, we've had a few guests experienced the loss of a baby and birth through the pandemic time. It just infuriates me that there was obviously stuff going on I'm not going to turn this political now, but that there were things going on that we didn't know about at that time, but have since come out in inquiries and what have you. And then obviously you're having to experience it's just inhumane that you can't go in to see your own child.
I've noticed there's some discrepancies as well, because with some guests, it depends on the hospital, because some guests, they were allowed in.
Yeah, yeah.
But only maybe in the foyer or the reception. I'm thinking, well, if you're that far in, it's with your other half.
Like, she was being told that, you know, our newborn had two holes in his heart and he's probably going to need open heart surgery to repair them. And she's getting that on her own. She's been told that he's failed his hearing screening and she's got to deal with that on her own. Four pounds at birth, just recovered from a C-section. There's nothing I can do.
Sorry, Raj. Can I just ask, was there no opportunity for... when that news was being delivered to Sharon, for you to be on a video call or on the end of a telephone when they're giving her this news, was that not even a...
No, was not offered to us. Oh, so she would just video call me and relay the information that was told to her.
That's disgusting.
The only time I could see him was via video calls, or she would send me photos throughout the day, and I would actually put the photos on the TV just so I could see him in a bigger screen so I could have a proper look at him.
That's disgusting.
And the next time I saw them was when I was allowed to come in to bring them home on the Sunday. And it's not what you want. Like, you wait that 9 months to have your baby. Your baby's born and that's it. You want to be able to take them home. But like I say, it would have been hard enough as it is if there were no complications.
Yeah.
But the fact that there were complications as well. Because he was so small, he needed help with feeding. So he had a feeding tube fitted. And then, again, just to be sent a photo of a newborn baby with a tube going through his nose and into his stomach. It's not nice. You want to be there to comfort your baby, to say, you know, just to show that you're there as well. Obviously, you know, they neither don't know what's going on, but just to be able to provide that comfort to both of them would have been something. But, you know, we just didn't have the opportunity to do that during that week. Very difficult. And then kind of later on, in Rian's life, we found out that he had a small pituitary gland on his brain. So that secretes growth hormones.
Okay.
And throughout the 7 months of Rian's life, he really, really struggled to put on weight. He had, you know, we had to had all these things to bulk up his formula to try and help him gain weight. He was refitted with a feeding tube to help him gain weight, and he just wasn't putting on weight, and nobody knew why. Mm. And then they did an MRI, and that's where they uncovered the small pituitary gland. So we were literally just getting to the point where we were talking to the doctors about him potentially needing injections, daily injections to give him those growth hormones. And we were waiting for, we actually had an appointment to speak to the person to sort that out. And then he passed away that same evening when we were having those conversations. So it just felt like we finally potentially had an answer as to why he was as small as he was and why he wasn't growing. And then he passed away that evening. But like, they they fought, the hospital, they fought to give us every chance to get Rion looked at, and did all the tests they could think of to help him and to help us. And we are very, very grateful for that. I know I've spoken to a lot of parents who haven't had the similar support that we've had, and I think we feel very lucky that we can say that we believe that everything that could have been done for Rion was done for Rion, and that gives us a sense of kind of comfort to know that what else could they have done. When we lost him, it was very, very sudden and unexpected. So essentially the night we lost him, so because he was fitted with a feeding tube, he occasionally would be sick. Mm. And it's normal because he's having a lot more volume than his little stomach could handle. So I fed him that night, put him to bed, put the monitor on, came downstairs. And I looked at the monitor and it looked like he was being sick, which, like I say, it was not abnormal. So I went upstairs straight away. I went over to his cot and he wasn't actually being sick. He was foaming at his mouth. So I picked him up, called Sharon to come upstairs. And as I was holding him, he was changing colour in my arms. And we called 999 straight away. They talked us through what to do. Sharon had to perform CPR on our bedroom floor on him. Ambulance came very, very quickly. It felt like forever before they got there. But they got there quickly. And even then, I think for us, when the ambulance arrived, it felt like he was, like they were going to take care of him. Like, I didn't for a second think we were going to lose him.
Yeah, okay.
Because even for the whole 7 months, everything that came his way, he fought everything that came his way. Like, if you looked at him, you would never, ever have guessed anything was wrong. He smiled through everything. So then when the ambulance turned up, we thought,
yeah
he's going to need some support and he's going to be needs to be looked after. But never did it cross my mind that we were going to lose him. Mm. And then we got, the ambulance came, then I was supposed to, so Sharon got in the ambulance and I was supposed to drive and come separately. But I feel like they knew something was going on. So they told me to get in the ambulance as well.
Okay. You can just feel it.
Yeah. And then again, the drive from our home to the hospital is between 10 and 12 minutes, but it felt like forever again.
Yeah.
And I just remember when we got to the hospital, we came out of the ambulance and into the corridor, there was just a line of just medical staff. Like, I would say 10, 12, just standing there waiting for us to arrive.
Waiting for you? Wow.
And I feel like that's when it hit us. Like, so Rion got taken into a room to be resuscitated. We got taken to a separate room. The lady who was in the ambulance stayed in the room with us. And she was like, "Oh, do you want to call your parents?" And we were like, "No, let's wait. Let's see what happens here." And again, in hindsight, it's like she was like, she knew,
but she couldn't say, or she didn't want to say maybe or anything like that, right? Yeah,
exactly, okay. Exactly that. And then we were then allowed to go into the resuscitation room, and they spent time trying to resuscitate. And then at one point the doctor came up to us and he was like, "We've been going for so long. Even if we do bring him back, he will never be the same." So we were like, "Just go back, do what you can." And then I just, this one bit that really sticks with me. And there was this lady in the room and every like 30 seconds or so, she would say, "No pulse." And I can remember her voice in my head to
sticks.
Exactly. I couldn't tell you what she looks like, what she was wearing, what her name was, anything, but I can hear her voice. I can still hear her saying like, "No pulse, no pulse, no pulse." It just sticks in my head. Mm. Then they just came over to us. They were like, "We have to stop." And then one by one, they started leaving the room, and I could see it, they were crying as they left the room. They were crying. And they walked out the room. But yeah, that was, and all this happened in less than an hour between me finding him the way I found him and them stopping the resuscitation.
It was that quick?
Less than an hour. that's how quickly everything changed for us.
I don't know how you come back from that.
Yeah.
I really don't. I know everyone's story is unique and everyone's grief journey is completely and utterly unique as well. And we've all got our own individual stories and battles that we've fought whilst losing our babies. But that is, I don't know how you come back from that. I really don't.
Because I saw your face when Roger was saying that story.
I've heard a lot of stories from lots of different people. And mate, honestly, I don't know you, but fucking hell, I don't know how you come back from something like that. Because, and I'm actually glad Dan asked the question, because I was going to ask exactly the same question as well, which was that you had never an inkling that this is all right, yeah, what the outcome would be. No. It was just, you know, like you say, that you were bulking his formula up and what have you, and like you said there about potentially having injections, so you would have been talking to endocrinologists about human growth hormone and all that sort of stuff, and then for that to just happen is just and I don't know if I'm presuming here, what's the sort of follow-up from that, because it's happened at home, was that, because I've heard stories where police become involved then because they have to, because it's to do with a child, and I'm trying to think of the best way of explaining it. It's not you're not treated as a criminal, but you have to be questioned about what's happened. Is that what happened in your case?
That so we so the police came to the hospital and they interviewed us. They kind of asked us what happened.
Yeah.
And exactly as you say, you they don't go there suspecting fault or foul play or anything like that. They just, because it is the death of a child in your home, they're obligated to go and investigate it. And they made that very clear to us when they were there.
How soon was this?
It's straight away.
Is it immediately?
Yeah.
Because you weighed your head at that moment.
An hour and a half, two of them passing, they were there.
Were they good with you though, Raj? Like, I know that they have to do it. Were they good the way they did it and things?
They were. But I just think there is no good way of doing it.
Obviously not.
In that moment, right, the last thing you want to do is have a copper next to you questioning the loss. There was a police car parked outside our house the entire time that we were at the hospital.
And then
I think it was because they didn't want anybody to enter or leave the house just in case.
Yeah.
I see. And then
when we left the hospital, we left in the police car. So they brought us home and then they wanted to look around the house. Bloody and they put their body cameras on and they walked around the house and they were like, they wanted to see the environment that Ryan was living in. We showed him the whole house. We showed him the living room where he was playing, where all his food was kept, and you know, where he slept, what his sleeping conditions were like, and all of that. We went along with everything that we understand they had their job to do, but at the same time, it just felt a lot.
That's what I'm thinking.
It's pretty callous, isn't it?
I agree with it, because it has to be done, because it. But it's not the, you know, within the hour, because you've got to do your checks. You've got to find out. It's just that balance.
Protocol and difficult thing is those police officers will not have wanted to do that.
It can't not be done. That,
but it has to be done, doesn't it? And I think
it just adds an extra layer onto it, doesn't it? In that particular heightened moment.
When you're in that heightened moment, because your son's just died, and you're being questioned by police. You know, like you say, you were showing them around the house, showing them where Ryan slept, where his toys were, where his food were, all of that sort of stuff. Did it ever cross your mind that that they were looking for anything potentially, or just that they were merely trying to gain?
Right, is it like paranoia? Like, what if they find something that I'm not aware of?
Yeah, that's what. Because I would imagine, because you're in a very vulnerable state at that point in time. So you know, you could say anything or you could do anything and it could be misconstrued into something which it, which it isn't. Did you ever feel that you were in that situation whereby you were scared to answer a question or you were scared to give detail to a question that you were being asked through fear of the fact that you were so vulnerable at that time?
Yeah, I think in hindsight, yes. I think I remember they asked us a question. So when we had to, when we fed him via the feeding tube, we had to check the pH level of his stomach to make sure it wasn't too acidic. Mm. And I remember I talked them through the process of feeding him. And I was like, yeah, so I checked the pH. It was pH this, which is within the normal ranges, whereas I probably didn't need to go into that much detail. But now in hindsight, it's like, maybe I went into that much detail just to make sure I was
Exactly. I think it's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like you just it's weird, that whole thing, just to go on a tangent for a second, because, you know, if you just get stopped by the, we've all been stopped by the police, haven't we? But it's for something, and, but you know nothing, you know, you're not broke the law, you're not speeding, and so you know you're fine. Despite knowing that, by the time the policeman or police lady has got to the side of the car, I am hyperventilating.
Oh, proper,
I'm sweating.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, and it just looks like, you know, I don't know, I've got a boot full of Chang or something like that. It's like, but you can't rationalise anything.
That is true, yeah.
So, I mean, is just from a a pissing about trivial angle. But imagine with that amount of,
So this is,
you go into overdrive.
And this is within 24 hours, isn't it? I would imagine.
Oh, wow, man.
Right?
Much less than 24 hours,
Less than 24 hours.
They were in the house.
So, while you were doing this, obviously, was Rian, was he still at the hospital at this point, or? Right. Okay. Yes. So you had to leave him behind at this point as well, right?
Yeah. So we after he passed, we were allowed to spend some time with him. Our families were allowed to come. So my family from Birmingham, Sharon's family from Bradford. So they all drove down. Mm. Must have been gone midnight, 1, 2 o'clock maybe. They drove down to spend some time with him as well.
It's quite a drive. And, isn't it?
We took a lock of his hair. Yeah. We got some like handprints done, and we just kind of sat in the room and we held him for as long as good. I remember leaving him was just impossible.
Were you given as much time as you needed, or were they?
Yeah. I have to say, when we were in the room, there were two members of the hospital staff in there with us, and they were very good. Finding the balance between giving us the space we needed, but also keeping us informed of what was going to happen.
Good.
And what was going to happen to him in the evening, what was going to happen in the subsequent days. But they kept the distance as well. And it was them who kind of suggested getting that lock of the hair and getting the hand things. You know, we would never have thought of doing that. Yeah. There's too many other things going on in our mind. So we're very grateful that we've got the very, very precious memories.
Where do you keep it? Do you have it somewhere in the house? Do you have it just locked away safe? Or?
So they're in his nursery now.
Right, okay.
So we're just too scared to take them out just in case, the molds, in case they drop and they smash. We just can't.
Yeah, well, I get that.
Deal with losing those. We did actually get his, while he was alive, we got his hands and his feet molded, casted and framed. And again, they're still 4 years on. We haven't stuck them up anywhere.
Yeah.
Just in case. Because you know, obviously his time was throughout lockdown. My parents probably met him twice.
Madness.
Sharon's family met him once. And that was it. Sharon, the people that saw him the most were at the hospital.
Oh my
God. Allowed to see you.
Yeah, because from Bradford and Birmingham and the lockdown, it just keeps stacking up, doesn't it? Ryan's flabbergasted.
This just further strengthens how we're going to have a pandemic of mental health crisis because. For instance, Raj just said there that his parents only saw Rian twice in his 7 month in the short 7 month life, and that's wrong.
Absolutely,
just wrong.
Yeah.
And you just said about was it Sharon's parents had only ever met him once.
Yeah.
It's just
It's not right.
Stop the world. I want to get off.
No, it's not right. It's true,
just
man.
Nuts.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
And it's mad because it's on a different on a different level and scale. But obviously, we've gone on to have Etta since we had Cali and stuff. And like, and I remember that when we had to, during the lockdown. I know it's talking about lockdown, but we basically had to take Etta around and almost say goodbye to mom and dad. And we took them around, and she could only see them through the window of the car. And then my mom started crying, and we had to drive. So Chris was like, we need to get out of here.
I can't. Yeah.
So just going back to what you said, was Ryan said, meeting him once, like, I don't know.
Do you know, before we move on, because I think I want to pick up on something that Ryan just mentioned then, and then bring it up for Raj, because I can't remember how you worded it, so if you could do it again, but about this, this meant that, you know, it's almost like a delayed fuse, isn't it, that's been lit for this mental health. Yeah, how did you put it?
I think we'll have a pandemic of mental health illness.
Based on the consequence of the lockdowns.
And that's not just for baby loss. I think that's just in general. I think we see...
Just from handling... That's what I was gonna, yeah. From that, because this was directly related to you, Raj, how mentally... Yeah. Where, I mean, obviously there's the grief and trauma, and I say obviously, but I'm not glossing over that, but because of what the world was going through at that time, and I guess you're feeling that extra isolation, like we said at the start, you're not allowed in the hospital. How did you ensure that you could be in a position to be supportive and be there for Sharon, vice versa, with Sharon to yourself and your relationships, because you've got to deal with this separately, but also as a couple, and you've been married for a while by this point.
Yeah, yeah. Do you mean following the loss or during?
Well, and you
both,
can
both. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think me and Sharon, we've basically grown up our adulthood together. So we are probably the only people that really understand the other two in a great level. She's probably the only person that really knows when I'm actually struggling. So I think we're good at recognizing those signs in each other. So I think following the loss of Rian, I would say we grieved differently, in the sense that she was a bit more vocal about it, whereas I just kind of went a little bit more quiet, and then I'd have my moments where it would all just come out. And a lot of the work I do now in the baby loss area is trying to change that.
Good.
Because of my own experience. Like it impacted me. I had 12 months of counselling following the loss of Rian. I really, really isolated myself.
Yeah.
Away. I didn't want to be. I didn't want to see.
Did you want
anyone.
To
I didn't
do
want
that?
To be around
Were you pushed to do it? Or did you want to do it? How did that the counselling come about?
A little bit of both. I think I knew I needed it.
It's that guy thing again, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. I just didn't want to be in social situations. I felt really, really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Being around people, and I knew I couldn't continue that way. I mean, even now, I think I still.
Yeah.
I'm a bit more aware of the situations that I go to now. Whereas, you know, before it would have been like, oh, we're going to this family do and we're just going to it. Now it's like, if I feel uncomfortable, then I make more of an effort to almost protect myself from it, knowing the impact that it may or may not have on me.
Raj, sorry, can I ask a question based on what you've just said there?
Yeah.
Do you think that if you hadn't have lost Rian during a pandemic, and I know it's on hindsight is a wonderful thing, do you think that may be that you're feeling there where you were isolated because during that time you were having to grieve as a couple and you weren't able to have that physical relationship with a parent, with a grandparent, with friends, you know, with brothers, with sisters. Do you think if we weren't in a pandemic, and you had the opportunity to be around people when you lost Rian, that you think that might have been different?
Potentially, yeah. And I think it's because obviously Rian spent all of his time with just me and Sharon, so it almost felt like we're the only ones that knew him. And so when we lost him, It felt like not that it impacted us more than it impacted anybody else, but it just felt like because we got that time with him, it was us that felt the lack of his presence anymore.
Yeah.
And so it almost felt like it was the two of us that had to find our way of pulling each other together and getting through it as a couple, because we spent those 7 months knowing all of the issues, that the medical issues that Rian was having. We tackled them together. We took it all on together, and I think you're right. It felt like it was our battle, our journey that we had to pull each other through.
Did you have any distractions? And we ask a lot of our guests this, just as a way to, you know, it's almost putting up like that mental barrier, that protective shield, isn't it? And when I say distractions, it could be anything that stops you thinking about or going back, you know, to the memory of the grief. And this could be, we've had lots of people who say it was throwing themselves into work. Obviously, some people with alcohol or addictions or gambling or anything, good and bad distractions, but... You know, as a way of a coping mechanism, was there something that you, and quite often you don't even notice you're doing it until maybe, you know, you're right at the depths of it, of a place.
Definitely, 100%. For me, it was trying to do something to give back in Rian's name. That's what even now keeps me going.
You still do it, yeah.
I think any parent that goes through loss, regardless of the stage of loss or the type of loss, will feel an element of blame on themselves. Mm. Even though you know there's nothing you could have done, it's impossible not to feel that. For me, the way that I've gone about my grieving process is trying to do whatever I can to help other people that have gone through what we've been through, or anybody with a child who has any kind of illness. And I do it all in Rian's name. It's my way of still fathering him.
Yeah.
It's my way of keeping his memory alive, keeping his name being mentioned.
Keeping him close to you, and, yeah.
Yeah, exactly that. And I throw myself into project, just trying to keep myself busy, keep me ticking on, and just making sure that I'm not stopping, because I have to keep pushing for him. I think he taught me a lot. Like, he went through a lot in his 7 months.
Yeah. And
for him to have battled the way he did and smiled the way he did through everything, I feel like he's I have to take strength from his strength, and that's
how it's like a little reminder, isn't it? And a change of perspective.
I was going to say, it changes perspective, doesn't it? It really does. And we say this a lot, you know, you literally, your whole life changes as far as your perspective is concerned. What you're doing and what you've done since, you know, with the football and things like that. Like, I saw earlier on Facebook that there was a lot of people kind of sharing the fact that, you know, because you're the manager, you class as the manager of the Sands Nottingham team, is that right? And there's a lot of people saying that, you know, that they'd shared it obviously as well. Okay. So things like that.
So you work with Sands Nottingham and you look after their football team.
Yeah. So I started the team.
We have arranged a game. Have we arranged a game?
We will do. Me and Raj are talking quite a lot to try and find time for that. Right, we are going to get
it's on the cards.
Watch
it's
out for cards. Matt, because when he plays, there's definitely an ambulance going to turn up.
I don't know if you knew, but Matt hurt his knee the last time we played.
Yeah. No, he did. We're joking, quite serious.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Sorry for that little tangent, but with that, and could you, based on what you said about your coping mechanisms, and that means that, you know, if people, if they want to reach out to you, obviously they can with the Lily May Foundation, but I think it's so important, as we have, and we mentioned this, we haven't mentioned it tonight, but we have our dads and granddads WhatsApp group, our community group, which is how many are in there now?
78.
It doesn't mean you have to be active in it. If it's just there, you can even mute it, you know, and just need, it's something there, which I guess is in real time, that you can just look at whenever that moment is. But can people reach out to you as well, Raj? How can they go about that? Where can they find you?
Yeah. So we're probably most active on Facebook. So Sands United FC Nottingham. Also Instagram, same name.
Yeah.
Or via email at sufcnottingham@gmail.com. And yeah, please do, if we can offer any kind of support, please do reach out. Yeah. Essentially, we are a team made up of men impacted by baby loss. In Nottingham, football is the tool that we've used to bring people together. But I say this constantly to my guys: we're very much a support group first and a football team second. You don't need to have any level of footballing ability.
Yeah,
it's just our safe space. It's our therapy.
It is that. It's exactly that. It's being around those kindred spirits, isn't it? And people who understand and know, you know, more. And yeah, just finding those new relationships.
Yeah.
I'll mention it quickly because it doesn't really matter, does it, how much a friendly is a friendly and how much maybe the people lining up on the other team are going through the same thing. Football still brings out the best and the worst in people, and there's still, you know. But then as soon as the final whistle goes, you're all friends again. I love that about the sport. You absolutely hate each other for 90 minutes.
But do you know what I think it is as well, though, is that you want to do well for your baby.
Yeah.
That's exactly. What it is.
That's exactly. Why there was one game we spoke about where one of the teams got a bit of a tonking. And I think it was like it was almost considered from one some angles a bit disrespectful, but from the other one, that goal, that meaning for
Ryan Palmer.
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention names, but yeah.
Oh, sorry, you can edit it out then. Sorry,
it's all right.
I thought that was knowledge. Sorry, mate.
But yeah, I mean, but it's still, you know, it's
it does, and it brings
up those emotions.
Yeah, and absolutely. It absolutely does, and it's pride, isn't it? It's pride. I'm sure that your dads are the same when they play for Sands, right?
We all have our baby's names under the badge. Okay. And every time you put on the shirt, it's like you're representing your baby when you're on the pitch. And we all have numbers on the back of our shirts, numbers that mean something to us. So I have number 7. And the reason I have that is I bought Rian a football shirt, a Juventus shirt.
Nice.
With number 7 on the back before he passed away. And it arrived after he passed away. Oh. It was supposed to be his first Christmas present. You're right that every time you jump on the pitch, you're doing it for your baby. You're representing not only your own baby, but the babies of
the others
next to you as well.
Yeah, you're right.
And he'll go down the pub afterwards, won't he?
Yeah. Sorry, what did you say, Raj? There's 50 of you.
Yeah, 50 of us now. Of differing levels of activities. Yeah. You know, some guys jumping on every match, some guys...
What's that, 50 in the squad?
Every now and then. No, we can't get a squad of 50. Squad-wise, we get about...
I say, who do you think you are, Chelsea?
That's just the defenders. Can I just ask you, Raj, because I just want to jump back to, obviously, losing Rian. Rian's was found to have a condition where there's no specific name given to it.
So after Rian passed, they took samples of his blood and muscle biopsies. And there's been a team in America doing tests on those samples to see if they can find anything. Like throughout the 7 months, nobody could tell us what was wrong. Like the combination of all the symptoms that he had, that no one had just ever seen before. And they think that there are 5 people ever in the world to have presented the same symptoms that Rian presented.
5 in the world?
In the world,
Bloody hell.
Ever. Yeah. The scary thing was, so now we've got another little boy, Ari, and when we were considering having another baby, there was always a risk that this could happen again.
Mm.
And because Rian's condition was unknown, they couldn't test it. Mm. They couldn't test for it. They couldn't test the embryo to say yes or no, he's got this condition, because they don't know what they're testing for.
So you're going in unknown. You're going in unknown, basically, in a sense, aren't you?
Yeah. They said to us that it was unlikely. They said it was like single figure percentages. But when you're first born, it's 5, yeah. 1 of 5 in the whole world.
Right. That means nothing anymore, does it?
Exactly. So we took that. We took a bit of a risk with it. We knew that there was a chance that it would happen. And Ari is not presenting any of the same symptoms
that
Rian was. The thing is now that the research has been conducted, they can test Ari. So we will soon be taking him in to be tested.
How long did you wait to have that conversation or leave that decision to, you know, go and for the rainbow baby and have Ari in, and how did that come about?
So I feel like when we first lost Rian, we were both like, we can't do this again. We can't take this. But I think as time went on, we just felt like really empty. Like we felt like we needed Rian to have a sibling. And we actually, we fell pregnant. And we had a miscarriage probably 18 months after we lost Rian. We had a miscarriage as well. And then when that happened, it was like, you know, we lost Rian at 7 months. Now we've had a miscarriage. And it was like, can we do it again?
Yeah.
And that miscarriage, it hit us hard.
If you don't mind me asking, how long into the pregnancy was the miscarriage?
It was really early. Was it, right? I think it was maybe 7 weeks.
Okay, right.
7 weeks into it, so really early. I know people have different views on miscarriages and whether it classes as a loss of a baby or not. For us, it was very much a loss of a baby. For us, we've lost two babies. So I got some tattoos done after we lost Rian. I got a baby blue star for Rian, and I got a purple star. So we both thought that the baby miscarried was a girl. So I got a lilac star tattooed for her as well. And now Ari's born, I've got a little green tattoo for him. But we know, we very much see that we've lost two babies. So even on our Sands United football shirts, we have stars to represent our babies. And I have two stars on mine, one for each of them.
It's a weird one, isn't it? It crops up from time to time, that discussion about, is it considered as, I'm doing quotations here, serious, but it's irrelevant, isn't it? Because it's the only opinion that matters in this is yours, because it's your child. Absolutely. And you get to decide how you feel about it, and everyone else can, sorry for the lack of a better word, fuck right off.
No,
no, absolutely. Exactly, absolutely wrong. Glad you said that.
Yeah.
Absolutely right, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. No, yeah.
You're right.
That's not the episode title, by the way.
No, because and especially... early
that's
losses.
Just arguing for no reason.
No, but especially early losses like you guys have had with the miscarriage, like it is very much seen as like, well, it's that word we've said before, isn't it? It's just a miscarriage.
Yeah.
And then what do you say?
Yeah, Ryan,
it's just a fucking fist in the face.
I've got a quote of this somewhere. Is it on here? Yeah.
This is just a fist in the face. But don't worry, you'll get over it.
It's true, right? You know?
Agree.
Well, thank you so much. I think, is there anything, guys, that you want to mention, to bring up? Anything, Raj, that you would like to say to these guys as well? And like we will say, you're more than welcome to join us again on the podcast at any point. It doesn't have to be for the whole show, although we'd love you to.
Come into the studio next time.
Come into the studio. You can come in for just...
Yeah, I really want to come into the studio. Yeah.
You can jump in on a different episode, like we had William Ellis on the last one who joined in with Luke and Jessica. So you're always more than welcome. Ryan's just handing me a note saying, make sure he wears his blue shirt if he comes in.
He's going to throw eggs at me, isn't he?
Throw eggs.
No, we just run out of toilet roll.
And if we don't before then we'll see you on the pitch when we get the footy game going on at some point.
See you on the pitch.
See you on the pitch. Well, I won't. I'll see you from the subs bench. But they'll see you on the pitch.
Dan's the
water boy. Guys, just a massive thank you for having me on this business. I think you guys do an amazing job anyway at giving people like me a platform to just to talk about the things that really need to get out of this. So thank you to you guys.
Absolutely. More than welcome. And right back at you as well, Raj. All the details on how you can find Raj and everything that he mentioned will be in the description for this. If they're not, just write me an angry DM and I'll immediately get them up there. But they'll be there anyway.
I just want to say thank you, Raj, because it's I know it's not easy to be able to come on to...
Yeah.
Certainly for on a platform like this, it's certainly not easy to be able to come on and spill your guts effectively, and give your give your story of your little boy, and I think you've done it with great dignity, and I'm
thank you.
I'm still shocked, but
on that note, all the best, Raj. Thank you very much for joining us. This has been the Still Parents Podcast, supported by Global's Make Some Noise. And that was episode 85 with Raj Chugger. If you'd like to come on any point yourself, whenever that is, we are here to accommodate you. It can be for any length of time, any date that you want to do, and you can come into the studio, do it remotely, whatever, whatever we need to do to accommodate you. You can find us on our social, Still Parents Podcast. Stillparentspodcast.co.uk is our website, and we've also launched the app that brings this episode to a close, and we will be back very, very soon. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye. See you later.
The Still Parents Podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.